I began adjusting my set of interacting roles while it was still possible, so that I could occupy what Victor Turner, the first significant experimental process anthropologist, refers to as a liminal role complex in the universities. I wanted to avoid cognitive dissonance and its expression in irrational hysteria that was surrounding me in academia and growing daily. I undertook to reinvent myself by reintegrating those opposing aspects of human expression. I wanted to retain my active membership of the major existing cultural institutions, not just university. Being in the world, but not of the world. This would not be difficult, as my past record demonstrates. However, my experience was now refined by the psychological, social, and cultural theories and practices that I had studied and taught at the university, and had been experimenting with in the fun revolution. I felt confident that I had matured to the autonomous stage of personality development described by David Riesman in The Lonely Crowd, and to guide myself, I had adopted the concept of a neural psychosocial stage, which would only take place when the oral, anal, and sexual phases of psychosocial development, frequently hypothesized by psychoanalysts, had been successfully negotiated, and I was now self-actualizing. Since culture and personality are symbiotic, this meant I was living in a difficult cultural reality, whilst like a good confusion, going for the motions of acting out my remaining social roles conscientiously. As a charismatic personality, I could easily become one of the gurus flourishing at the time. But my past experience as an evacuated child in England during the Battle of Britain, head choir boy in the ancient church of Framlingham and Suffolk, Boy Scout leader in Kent, RAF pilot officer trained in astronavigation in Canada, co-founder of the first Hector Berlioz Society, rep for a profit papermush in the City of London, backpacker in Europe and the Middle East, teacher in Shia Iran in a school for Jews exiled from Baathist, Iraq, sole community arts organizer for two universities, and currently the first qualified lecturer in theoretical sociology in Australasia, rendered such an idea ridiculous. I was only 35, but no one could say I lacked experience, nor did I have any record of failure, except in my folie à deux marriage, based on friendship more than passion. Apart from this, I had not suffered any mentally damaging personal experiences, except from compulsory secular education. And even that was interrupted several times by evacuation in the early years of the Second World War. Throwing myself on the mercy of the universe to achieve this disembedding from the universe as a machine, and the reinvention of myself as part of the organic world, I would have to rely much more on playfully expressed trust and love, and upon my realization as a sociologist of the currently neglected but vital who dared to make responsible decisions which they judged to be right, even when their colleagues might object. Creativity had not yet been completely smothered or deformed by importance of role theory. Fortunately, in the late 1960s and early 1970s, there were still a few administrators left, and the spin and conformist political correctness of the glowing malevolent blob. I was able in that transitional time to persuade important university and artistic authorities to grant me roles that, although still legitimate within the existing cultural paradigm, were based on mutual trust and hence were uncontractual, peripheral, and without clear purpose. Such social roles are liminal, since they provide transitions or doorways to other models of socio-cultural and personal reality or character. As part of my process of organic re-embodiment, I pursued harmonious coherence above all else, bringing together the fragmented roles and narratives, and doing my best to avoid cognitive dissonance in the symbolic expression of the ideological, metaphysical basis of my cultural being. To make this manageable, I combined many theories, including Jung's multicultural depth psychology, the role theory of George Mead and others, the social system ideal typology of Max Weber and Talcott Parsons, and Vaihinger's useful fiction theory for the changing paradigms of the cultural historical narrative. The first significant event that should have come to the attention of the world, both outside and inside academia, took place on the 1st of April 1969. This was my appointment by the university and student administrations of the University of New South Wales as their official wizard, supported by a jointly supplied honorarium. I believe the role of wizard, if culturally legitimated and not self-appointed, is the key transitional role complex for the creative intellectuals of our time. The first scientists emerging from a religious agricultural civilization were culturally legitimated by the church. Anthropologists have described how shamans made the transition to culturally legitimated priests as their societies were transformed from hunter-gatherers to agriculturalists. But there was a deafening silence in intellectual classes. The fate of an outsider. Following my appointment as wizard of New South Wales University, I found myself on the periphery of the universe of discourse, dismissed without a thought, a little more than a dropout, rather bizarre entertainer. Most of the popular Australian magazines described me as a mad clown, which I tolerated, so that at least I was still visible to the public, and I continued my enjoyable association with the counterculture happenings at music festivals. However, fanatics still treated me as a threat to their shallow, self-righteous confidence. This is when I believe the blob found its secure base in the universities with the academics, distancing themselves from the fury and bullying of the millenarian student power leaders who had taken over the student unions and newspapers. We now know that their principal became the professors and administrators of the woke universities. New roles and new narratives. Once appointed university wizard, I had many more new narratives to choose from. My earliest was finding myself in a narrative like that of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, very popular at the time. I was acting out the role of the intellectual Gandalf, who prefers the company of hobbits to those of dwarves, humans, and elves. He finds out to his horror that all the other wizards have been corrupted by power and are now absorbed into the featureless, dark, impenetrable blob of Sauron. Coming across the lost master ring of power, Gandalf wisely refuses to put it on his finger, fearing that his skill as an intellectual will enable him to rationalize his personal use of the power of others that it brings. Instead, he entrusts it to be carried by the uneducated, peasant, fun-loving, riddle-solving hobbits in a team accompanied by himself and a few trustworthy humans, dwarves, and elves. He trusts the hobbit peasants to resist the temptation of using its magic for themselves, since he knows they're economically independent, generally mind their own business, love fun, and lack all desire for power without responsibility. I also took on the role of a thaumatocratic shaman, called upon to perform, to heal the damaged souls of the over-educated career academics and the neurotic student power leaders, driven by insane hunger for power and puritanical self-righteousness, who were at the time identifying with the angry and violent Red Guards in China and student Jacobins in Paris. This was the origins of the Fund Evolution of 1968 at University of New South Wales. Between 1968 and 1970, I found a fellow spirit in the clinical psychiatrist Dr. Neville Yeomans, the pioneer community therapist, and we jointly organised fun days in the park. Another colleague at my time was Mad Mel, a disc jockey whose giant stirs featuring rock bands and spectacular open-air sights in the city, like Bondi Beach and the Harbour Bridge, were unprecedented.